You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
6 years ago, Deb Perlman started a modest food blog called Smitten Kitchen, where she detailed her adventures cooking in her tiny Manhattan apartment. It has since cultivated a large following and won numerous honors and praise from all over the food industry. And now her recipes and cooking advice have been put into book form as The Smitten Kitchen Cookbook, published by Alfred A. Knopf. And I'm very pleased that it brings Deb Perlman back to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What kind of readership did you expect to get when you began writing your blog?
I expected my mom and my husband to show up each day. And that was about it. I thought it was going to be a six-month endeavor. I imagine that was how long most food blogs lasted. And most of the ones that I read, there was a clear angle. There was something that everybody did. Maybe it was Texan home cooking, or they were teaching themselves to cook. And I didn't have an angle. I just liked to cook. So I didn't think anyone would glom onto that.
But you also were talking about cooking in a very small Manhattan space.
I was. I live in New York City, where it's not uncommon to have a shoebox kitchen, and a lot of people don't use them. You know, my friend uses her oven for sweater storage, classic New Yorker line. But I like to cook. And so what really would drive me into the kitchen were recipes that I felt were worth it, worth going into your tiny kitchen and dealing with the walk-up and the groceries and the lack of dishwasher. And so that was really my focus.
And you describe your approach to food and cooking as obsessive.
I am a little obsessive, and I think that comes from the idea that in New York City, you really don't have to cook every night. So if you're going to, don't you want to cook something great? I don't want to just make roast chicken. I want to make the very best roast chicken I can possibly make that will always be worth my time. And so that's really where the obsessiveness comes from, where I didn't feel like I had to compromise because I could always eat something really great. So I wanted to make something really even better.
And obsessiveness helps, I imagine, when you're doing a blog, because where others might say, oh, I'm not sure I want to work on the blog today. If you're obsessive, you work on the blog.
I love it. I really do. I mean, for me, it's very much like the center of what I do. And I love the website. I love, because I can have conversations with readers. It's not just me and a laptop. It's like me and then all these people asking me questions. And we have fun conversations. And if you don't have, like, I get to hear all these cool stories from people. So it's been, I think it makes it much more fun to keep too.
And does the interaction actually feed you? I mean, feed your knowledge about food?
Absolutely.
Have you gotten good recipes out of it?
Absolutely. Actually, one of my favorite examples is I had a recipe on the site called the Everyday Chocolate Cake. It's a rich chocolate loaf cake. It would be great. You don't have to make it for a special occasion. And you bake it in a loaf pan. And the reader told me that she had been out of buttermilk, which you use in there, and she used red wine instead. And I was like, really?
Red wine instead of sour cream or
I'm like,
yogurt or something.
She went to red wine, and I looked it up, and the pH are actually about the same. And she said she wasn't crazy about it, that it was a little cinnamony, and she wasn't into it, but she thought it would be interesting for me to hear. And I was like, I didn't even care whether she liked it. I, like, ran to the kitchen, and I made it, and it became the red wine chocolate cake, and I love it. I mean, it's really great for holiday entertaining. It's wine and chocolate and cinnamon and...
But one of the things that stands out about the dishes you cook is that they're not incredibly complicated, and they don't have any of the fad ingredients. You really do seem to just want to make something. If you're going to make a roast chicken, you say the best roast chicken. You want to make the roast chicken that tastes most like roast chicken.
I want it to taste like roast chicken, and I want you to be able to go to your regular grocery store and get all the ingredients. I don't want you to have to go to specialty markets. I love working with seasonal ingredients. We have a lot of green markets in New York City, but I'm most interested in cooking where the recipe transcends the food. So whether you're using the most beautiful freshly dug carrots or a grocery store carrot, it will still taste good because it's the recipe that transforms the ingredient.
So can a person without much cooking experience have success cooking these recipes?
That was my goal. I feel that there are not bad cooks. There are bad recipes. So my goal was to create recipes where you could be someone who's never cooked before, you've never made cake, and follow this from beginning to end without talking down to people. But that you should be able to follow this and get exactly what I made. And if you aren't, then my recipe is not clear enough. You're not wrong.
You also have a lot of text with each recipe. So that's really been an important part of the success of the blog, because people feel that they kind of know you. They know you're thinking about different things.
Well, you know, I think it's one thing to say, here's roast chicken, you should make it. And it's another thing to say, I didn't even know I liked roast chicken until I was on vacation in Paris and I had this street rotisserie chicken. I mean, I think the story is what anchors the recipe. It's what makes it more interesting. And so I would love to hear longer stories in other cookbooks too.
You also say you don't particularly like fish, and yet you have a fish recipe here.
I like to challenge myself. I'm a picky eater. I'm a closet picky eater, but I like to challenge myself. Most things in the book or on the site have been some way of challenging what I think I know about a food and trying to challenge myself to like it, find it a way that I would enjoy it.
By the way, we have some recipes posted on our website. The pancetta white bean and Swiss chard pot pies, the plum poppy seed muffins, and tre leches rice pudding.
Yay. I love that one for this time of year, too.
Did you work in the food industry before you started doing this?
Not at all. I mean, I have been a barista. I worked at a bakery in high school, but I'm not at all in the official food industry, I guess.
How did you come up with the name Smitten Kitchen?
I actually always like the word smitten. I kind of like the duality of it. You know, it means smiting something or being kind of striking it down, but it's also got this sort of squishy implication. So I think I like the way there's two sides to the word.
And at the beginning, the Smitten Kitchen was really very, very small. You've moved?
Actually, when I moved in the spring of 2009, and I moved from a slightly larger small kitchen to a smaller small kitchen. So
I would have thought somebody like you would have said bigger kitchen was one of the absolutely non-negotiables.
So the non-negotiable for me was a window in the kitchen and a dishwasher. I had been hand washing dishes like my entire New York life, and I'd had enough. So I found those two things, and it had a window, and it's actually a very sunny kitchen, but it's tiny.
So do you think that the size of your kitchen has affected your approach to cooking?
I think it's helped me rein in some of my impulses. Like when I run out of counter space, this recipe is officially a pain. And so I feel like, you know, you can't do something in three different bowls. You have to get it down to two. And it forced me to ask questions like, if I do this cake in one bowl instead of the three or two bowls I'm supposed to, is it worse? Is it that much worse that I should ask people to dirty extra dishes? The answer was quite often no.
But you also have to come up with a kind of a clean-as-you-go approach.
I probably should, but instead I leave like a mess in my wake. I understand there are clean-as-you-go people, but I just make a mess and run from it.
Do you prep ingredients the night before?
I don't always, but I do use ingredient prep a lot more than I used to. I don't think it's absolutely necessary to cook well, but if you're a busy parent with a lot of interruption or just somebody who doesn't know that you have time for all the steps in one night, you can. You can pre-chop all your vegetables and get them out of the way and then do it when you have time.
I used to live in Chinatown, and my upstairs neighbor was a dim sum chef, and he came to my house and he saw all the pots and pans. He said, too many things. He said, all you need is a wok, a frying pan, and a saucepan or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was happy to have all those other things. But when you have a small kitchen, you really do have to be picky about the equipment that you keep.
Mm-hmm. I would say, well, wok and frying pan, maybe my equivalent would be a big Dutch oven that you can use for everything from soups to stews to braises. I love a big 12-inch cast iron skillet, like those old ones. You can buy them used, you can buy them new. I think you can cook almost everything in the world in that. And a good chef's knife, or even a moderately good chef's knife. You don't have to break the bank. But I think with those three things, you could cook almost anything.
Are most of the appliances worth the money? Would you want a KitchenAid? Would you... Do you have a microwave?
I don't have a microwave. There are times it would be helpful, but I just decided... this is the space I have, what's worth it. I do have a KitchenAid, but I don't leave it out on the counter. So I never got the super heavy one. I got the lightest one I could that I can put it up on top of the fridge when I'm not using it. But I'm glad that I don't have – look, there are days that I'd like a bigger kitchen. But for the most part, I just think it forces you to choose. And sometimes those choices ended up being really good to not have an overly cluttered kitchen. You have to work with what you have.
My guest is Deb Perlman, whose cookbook, The Smitten Kitchen Cookbook, is Recipes and Wisdom from an Obsessive Home Cook. It says as a subtitle. It's published by Knopf. In a lovely book lots of pictures. You always know that the publisher believes in you when they're willing to include this many color illustrations.
I appreciate it, too. I actually took all the pictures for the book. I'm kind of an amateur photographer, but I know what I'm trying to get, so I thought it would have been weird to bring in somebody else to take the pictures.
Throughout the book, there are recipes that involve using fresh fruits and vegetables like the peach dumplings or a butternut squash galette. Did you create the recipes according to seasons?
I didn't want it to be too anchored in a season, but I do cook seasonally. You know, I think about cranberries in the fall, and I think about peaches in the summer. So I didn't want it to be too much, but it is the way I cook. So a little bit, but I wanted it to be a year-round book.
Now, you mentioned that you wanted recipes that where you could just use the carrots from the supermarket. Mm-hmm. Do you think that gourmet ingredients don't live up to the hype?
I actually think, well, I don't want to, I could never say across the board that gourmet is better, because it's not always. I like the idea of supporting local agriculture, local farmers that come into the city. I'd much rather buy that, given the choice, but I know that this is not always a financial option for people, and it's not always an option for people who don't have farmers markets a block from their apartment like I do. So it really, I wanted people to be able to use what they have and not feel like if they just have to go to whatever grocery store down the street, you know, big box, whatever, that they weren't going to be able to cook well. I feel like too many cookbooks too many recipes these days say you have to have the very best of everything, and I just don't think that's the reality.
They tell you the kind of chocolate you have to use.
Yeah, and I just think
and it's always the most expensive one in the shop.
It's the most expensive one, and how are you saying that your recipe isn't very good because it won't work with average chocolate? I mean, once in a while I'll mention a brand, but it's usually when I feel so strongly that it's worth it, that it would be worth for me to go outside my comfort zone to ask you to get it.
What about frozen vegetables?
I think they work in a lot of occasions. I would say that I tend to work much more with fresh ones. But, you know, there are a lot of things for which if it's going to work with frozen, I will absolutely tell you.
I once moderated a panel. One of the members was Lynn Rosetta Casper of NPR fame. She hates the word foodie. What is your feeling about the word foodie?
I hate it, too.
What bothers you about that?
It's this idea of chasing food for sport. And I love cooking, and I love going out for a good meal. But it's not my hobby. It's sort of like it's this thing that we enjoy. I like sitting around the table with family and friends, but I'm not chasing something to show off that I got it.
Well, when you go to a restaurant, are you looking for a restaurant that does the kind of food that you cook, or are you looking for something that is totally different from your approach?
It's a mix. On a weekday night, I often love something that's, the seasonal local. I love the farm-to-table restaurants. I love to see what they're doing with the same vegetables that I have. Sometimes it's very inspiring. And I also like to try food that I would never make at home to get out of my comfort zone.
Now, there are 700 recipes or over 700 recipes on your website. Are any of them your own invention?
Of course, there's a good mix. I would say the arc of the site for the last 6 years has been going from largely working from established recipes to working more and more with my own as I became more comfortable in the kitchen. I was quite an amateur when I began, and I didn't feel comfortable making recipes what I wanted them to be. And so I kind of taught myself through other people's structures. And now I feel when I want to make cauliflower fritters, as I did last week, I make cauliflower fritters and I know how to do it.
I mean, just from like a composer, you just say, okay, here are the notes I'm going to use, and
yeah,
I'm sure it's going to work out. Can you taste a food before you cook it?
I often can, and that's what I'm looking for. It doesn't mean that I always get it right on the first try, but I knew very clearly I wanted feta, I wanted garlic, I wanted very specific things, and I wanted it to be sharp and bright.
Most of the dishes you have in the book and on the blog are from scratch. Does cooking everything from scratch really make a difference?
I don't think it. I think that you should use whatever shortcuts you're comfortable with. What I like is to give people the tools to do it. So if you want to swap in store-bought pie crust, swap in store-bought pie crust. But if you want to know how simple it could be to make your own, I'd like to show you. I don't want my recipe to say start by a trip to the store to buy some frozen pie crust. I'd rather show you how to make it, and you can swap in wherever you feel that it's not worth your trouble.
What kind of food did you grow up eating?
I grew up eating normal home cooking. I don't think my parents were, oh, there's the foodie word.
Well, you have an interesting story about noodle kugel.
I do have an interesting story about noodle kugel. So my parents were dating, and I think they went to a bridal shower for one of the cousins, and my father's aunt made a good Jewish, classic Jewish German noodle kugel, and my mom thought it was the best thing she'd ever eaten in her entire life. So she asked for the recipe, and she said, "Not unless you marry my Michael." And so my mom did. I hope that's okay. I think people have gotten worse married for worse reasons.
Do you have that recipe?
I do. It's on my site, and it's called My Family's Noodle Kugel, and it is very rich and very delicious.
Now, what happens when something doesn't turn out the way you imagined? You just throw it out?
I storm off in a huff, and I pout. And then I come back later with a clearer head.
Somebody else suggested you just simply rename the recipe.
See, I think...
Burnt cauliflower.
Burnt orange cake. I think I'm too obsessive. I'm too obsessed with that thing that I wanted to do. So we will usually eat it anyway, unless it's absolutely disgusting. Fortunately, the longer you cook, the less horrible your mistakes usually are, because
but you get distracted and leave something in the oven longer than you expected.
All the time. So then we have crispy. But then I will go back and try to get it right for the side of the book.
Now, there are certain recipes you say are real favorites. Other than the apple cider caramels, are there recipes in the book that really stand out for you?
I love the mushroom bourguignon. That actually started on the website. It's one of the few that kind of made the trek over to the book. But it's just, I love beef bourguignon, but it's very rich. It's not really a weekday night affair. And this is, it's vegetarian, so it's great for vegetarian guests, but it's not a dinky recipe. It's a hearty stew, and you can eat it with it. It's a really lovely in the winter.
When you realized that the blog was taking off, did you feel the need to get some formal culinary training?
No, I mean, I've just kept doing what I'm doing. I have, I've taken maybe two classes over the years. I took one on bread because I felt like I kind of had a little gap there in my knowledge, and I wanted to be better at it. And I've taken a class on. I took a little bit of a pasta making class once, and it was fun to get a little more information where I had a big gap.
But had you learned how to cook from watching your mother cook?
I would say that I learned a little bit from watching my mom cook, but I mostly learned by figuring things out on my own. My mom's a great cook. She worked her way through Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking. That was how my mom taught herself to cook.
But she didn't do a blog about it.
No, she didn't.
Somebody else did that.
No, somebody else did it. Otherwise, it would have been called the Judy Julia blog.
There are people who feel that techniques are really important, people like Jacques Pepin, and that you can only learn that if somebody shows you really how to chop something up or, the right moment for flipping something. You don't feel that way.
I think you can learn it from practice. I think you absolutely can. I never took a knife skills class, and I can't chop an onion as fast as Jacques Pepin either, but I don't know, for home cooking it matters that much. You're in your kitchen. Do it at your own speed.
Did people give you good cooking advice, especially once you started doing the blog?
I feel like I got some good cooking advice, but mostly I felt like what I got was this support system where if I said, "My God, guys, I want to make this crazy thing," they'd be like, "Do it, do it, do it," which is really fun.
I wonder if any of our listeners read your blog. I'm inviting them to call us here at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guest is Deb Perelman, Perelman. Her cookbook, The Smitten Kitchen Cookbook, it is published by Knopf. And that had to come as a surprise. Knopf is one of the most prestigious publishing houses, the house that gave us Julia Child and Marcella Hazan. Did you approach them, or they approach you?
I still don't know what they're doing with me, actually. But I think that they came to us when we were circulating the proposal. So I did a book proposal and tried to meet with people who were interested.
Have you ever thought of going into the business professionally, opening a restaurant, for example?
It's not an interest of mine. I should never say never, because I also once said I was never going to write a cookbook, which I've been reminded of since. But it's not my main interest. I really like cooking for family and friends, and I like cooking what I feel like cooking and not the same thing every day for strangers.
But and not a cooking show either?
I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out, but it's not. I'm really happy doing the website, and I'm really enjoying doing the book, so we'll see what happens.
Let's take a call. Maria, hi, you're on the air.
That's Marla, actually.
Oh, Marla, I'm sorry. I misread
Thanks.
That.
Oh, I just wanted to say hi to Deb.
Hi.
I really enjoy your website and your recipes.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to getting the book.
Okay.
Do you follow?
You're going to be coming to a bookstore near us, but unfortunately I won't be able to make it there to meet you that day.
Oh, are you in Montclair?
Bridgewater? We're near Bridgewater.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's near where I grew up, so we wanted to get back there.
Well, thank you for calling. Sean from Rockaway, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, I don't really have a question. Just say I made the Oreo cookie recipe, and I definitely think Hug is like one of my first go-to, usually I go through recipes online and then just make a synopsis of what,
You combine all of the suggestions and come up with your own conglomeration.
No, I get like a generalization, but I love your blog. It's great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Now, Sean, what's it like out in Rockaway? Aren't you living in the affected area?
Yeah. I'm not. Obviously, we can't stay because there's nothing. There's nothing here. But destruction. But we're rebuilding.
Mm-hmm. Is your kitchen okay? Are you able to cook?
Yeah, actually, my kitchen is okay. And when we get gas turned on, we'll be ready to go.
You have no gas. Oh, how terrible!
Oh my goodness!
No gas, no water. Got electricity, but
Well, good luck, Sean.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Christine in Westchester asks, what's your favorite go-to meal? Is there a meal that you, let's say somebody, at the last minute you realize somebody's coming to dinner?
Mm-hmm. I would say I actually have two. I love doing roast chicken with the tiny potatoes. That's actually in the book. It's a nice, simple way to do chicken. You can take the backbone out, which sounds scary, but I try to walk you through it, so it's very simple. And then you can roast a whole chicken in 40 minutes with beautiful potatoes. And my other favorite, if you just want to do something a little more fun, is to do steamed mussels with fries, and I have a recipe for oven fries, so it's really like you could do it on a weekday night, but it feels really fancy. Pick up a baguette, make a green salad, have your friends bring wine.
That's an important part.
I think that I will make you dinner and you should bring me wine. I think it's a fair exchange.
Steve, hi, you're on the air.
Why, thank you. I have been following Smitten Kitchen for quite a while. I'm a restaurant chef primarily in the West Village. And during Hurricane Sandy, because we didn't have anything else to do, one of our restaurants still had hot water, gas, and lots of candles. So we opened for the entire duration, and I composed a number of plots du jour. The first night was Deb's mushroom bourguignon.
No, that is did you like it?
Oh man, my problem was my first batch. I used some sort of box wine. And then I realized, that we really had some very good wines around. And so I remade it with the better wine, and it was excellent. But still, everybody ended up eating all of it. I must have made 30 pounds of it, I think.
I am so flattered,
glad. It was a great night. People sang, they danced, we have a piano, et cetera, et cetera. It was
one of
the most brilliant moments I've ever had.
We had another guest on the show recently who said that he actually has turned to Deb's beef bourguignon rather than Julia Child's, because as wonderful as Julia's is, it's way too complicated. How did you simplify it so?
I was thinking of a mushroom stew, and I was thinking about how much I love the flavors of beef bourguignon. I was a vegetarian for a long time, and I really feel that so much of what we think we like about meat, and I do like meat, but it's the flavors that you apply to it, and bourguignon is really about this rich sauce. So I actually followed Julia Child's recipe quite closely. But, the cooking time is very minimal for mushrooms, but you can still get those flavors. And so I was looking at the classic structure and shortening the times and abbreviating a lot of the steps.
Steve, thank you so much. It didn't embarrass you at all to use an amateur's recipe in a professional restaurant?
We are all talented amateurs. But what I do want to point out is there's a great amount of problem in the vegan community that mushrooms are actually much, much more closely related to animals than to vegetables.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
They're fun. Well, they're fungi, but I think that's...
They are fun.
Yeah. And but I think fungi are not animals. I'm sorry. Until they stop moving around.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole, but nice try.
Benjamin from the Upper East Side. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how do you do? I'm an amateur cook who gets a lot of good reactions from friends and family about my cooking, and I have been pressed by friends and family to put a cookbook together. And it's also a very simple food that's just, you know, ordinary cooking methods, nothing esoteric. And I wonder if you could offer any advice on how you shopped your idea around to publishers without getting whisked out the door, because I expect that there's a huge, you know, there's such an overabundance of cookbooks in the universe.
I do. And I think it really helps to have a platform. If you haven't started a blog or a website, I think it really helps to get your name out that way, because then they know what you're doing. You have this established voice. They know what they're looking for. They know what your audience is going to look like. And then when you write a proposal, they'll know who they're selling to. And you will also be able to prove what publishers really want to hear, that you have a platform to sell from, and you will have a website that you can sell through.
Thank you so much for your call. We also got a call from a listener who said it's not just New York Kitchen. She learned how to cook through your blog in her Philadelphia kitchen.
Wow.
The cookbook from Deb Perlman, the Smitten Kitchen Cookbook, Recipes and Wisdom from an Obsessive Home Cook, published by Knopf. And we have a few of the recipes on our website at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.